Sam picked up the trail back at the arroyo. He could have followed the wagon tracks, but there was still a slim possibility that the wagon and its escort weren't the same bunch that had jumped him and Matt. He hadn't gone more than half a mile, though, when the two trails merged. The men who had fled from the battle at the arroyo had rejoined the wagon, and all of them had headed southeast toward the settlement called Flat Rock. Sam's eyes constantly searched the barren landscape around him as he followed the tracks. He didn't expect to run into an ambush, but he and Matt hadn't been expecting the one several days earlier either. Out here on the frontier, it was always a good idea to be alert. From time to time, Sam even checked behind him to make sure Juan Pablo hadn't changed his mind and started following him. He didn't know any reason why the Navajo warrior would do that, other than sheer contrariness, which Juan Pablo seemed to have in abundance. The trail didn't deviate much from its southeastward course, just enough now and then to avoid natural obstacles, like the scattered red rock mesas and stone chimneys that thrust up from the plains around them. From time to time, Sam came to narrow creeks that were little more than trickles, but in this dry, dusty land, that was enough water to cause lines of green where mesquites and stunted cottonwoods grew on the banks. When the sun was touching the western horizon behind him, he began looking for a place to make camp. He settled for a place beside one of those narrow streams, so he and his horse would have water and he could refill his canteens. After picketing and unsaddling his horse, he gathered buffalo chips and used them to fuel a small fire, just big enough to boil some coffee. As soon as he'd done that, he scooped sand on the flames to extinguish them and had a meager supper on the venison and dried corn he brought from the Navajo Canyon. When Sam had finished eating, he plucked a large handful of bean pods from the mesquites. He scattered them around the area where he intended to spread his blankets. If anyone approached those blankets in the darkness, they would either step on the pods, causing them to crunch under the skulker's boots, or kick them and set the beans to rattling. Either way, the noise would serve as a warning. He spread the blankets and set his saddle where he could use it as a pillow, then placed his hat on the saddle. Then he took his Winchester and stepped across the creek. It was narrow enough that he didn't even get his boots wet. He walked along the stream for about 50 yards to a place where the bank had caved in some and formed a little hollow. After poking in that space with a rifle barrel to make sure no rattlers were lurking in it, Sam settled down with his back in the hollow. He could sleep sitting up when he had to, and tonight his gut told him that might be a good idea. The heat of the day lingered as night fell, although it would cool off some before morning. Sam's eyelids grew heavy as he sat there with the Winchester across his lap. He let himself doze off. He knew there was probably no need for so much caution, but better to be careful than dead. When he woke up sometime far in the night, at first he didn't hear anything and wondered what had roused him from slumber. A couple of seconds later, he heard the mesquite pods. There was no wind, so he knew they weren't swaying on the trees. That was confirmed an instant later.
Ventilate him!
Sam leaned forward as he saw orange flashes stab from the muzzles of two revolvers. He knew they were pouring lead into his blankets, saddle, and hat, and he wasn't happy about the damage they'd be doing to those items. Better than putting holes in his hide, though. He brought the Winchester to his shoulder, levering a round into the chamber as he did so. He aimed just above one set of muzzle flashes. In the middle of the volley, Sam had shifted his aim to the other bushwhacker. Clearly, some of his bullets had scored, but the gunman just shifted their aim to his sanctuary along the creek. Sam pulled back as far into the hollow as he could, as slugs smacked into the dirt wall next to him. He waited for a lull, then sprayed shots along the opposite side of the creek bank, where the men had believed him to be camped.
Let's vamoose! I'm bleeding bad!
Sam listened, waiting. Wary of a trick, he stayed where he was and took advantage of the opportunity to reload the Winchester, thumbing cartridges through the loading gate until the magazine was full again. Once he'd done that, he waited some more, until finally he stood up and made his way cautiously toward the campsite. He had picketed his horse a short distance away, hoping that the animal would be out of the line of fire if any trouble broke out. That was the first thing he checked, and he was relieved to see that the horse appeared to be fine, other than being a little spooked by the racket and the stench of powder smoke in the air. When Sam approached the spot where he had spread his blankets, he saw several dark splashes on the ground. Kneeling, he touched a finger to one of those splashes, then rubbed it against his thumb. Blood, he was pretty sure. So he had winged at least one of the men, no doubt about that. Not fatally, though, and possibly not even seriously, because both of the bushwhackers had been able to flee like they had wings on their feet. He straightened and went over to his bedroll. His hat lay off to one side, where it had been thrown by the bullets that hit it. Sam picked it up and held it over his head. Stars shone through the holes ripped in the hat. He could always buy another hat, but not another head. The leather on his saddle had been torn too, and slugs had gouged grooves in the wood underneath it. That damage could be repaired, and his blankets could be patched and mended. In other ways, though, the situation had become much more complicated. He asked himself how the bushwhackers had known where to look for him. He supposed it was possible the leaders of the bunch, whoever they were, could have posted men to watch the trail and ambush anyone who seemed to be searching for them. It was also possible that the two men who'd snuck up on his camp tonight had nothing to do with what had happened several days earlier. They could have been a pair of drifting outlaws bent on murder and robbery. But if they weren't, if they were connected to the men who had tried before to kill Sam and Matt, now they knew one of their intended victims was on their trail. That meant if they were in Flat Rock, they would be on the lookout for him when he rode into town. This was going to make Sam's job even more difficult and dangerous. But that was nothing new. He would deal with whatever was waiting for him in Flat Rock when he got there. In his room, Zach Jardine sat up in a tangle of grimy sheets. The woman who lay beside him shifted a little in her sleep. Jardine couldn't remember her name. Dolly, Dottie, something like that. It didn't matter. She had taken a nip of laudanum when she and Jardine were through with their business, so it wasn't likely she was going to wake up anytime soon.
God damn it.
That racket was liable to rouse anybody else who was sleeping, though, so Jardine swung his legs off the bed and stood up. Wearing only the bottom half of a pair of long johns, Jardine fumbled around on the little table beside the bed until he found a match. He held it to the wick of the candle that sat on the table as well. Then he turned to the ladder-back chair where he had hung his gun belt. He pulled the Colt from its holster and looped his thumb over the hammer. With the candlelight shining on the heavy slabs of muscle on his chest and shoulders, he went to the door.
What the hell is it?
Zach, Joe Hutto just rode in with Three Finger Smith. Three Finger caught a bullet.
How bad is he hurt?
I don't know. That Englisher woman's taking a look at him now. She claims to know something about doctoring. I think he'll live, though.
Joe's still downstairs?
Yeah.
I'll be down in a minute to talk to him. I want to know what happened.
I got a pretty good idea what happened, Zach. Somebody's on our trail.
That's what I think, too. Tell Joe not to go anywhere.
You bet.
After getting dressed, Jardine clattered downstairs to the main room of the Buckingham Palace, the saloon and whorehouse that was the biggest building in the relatively new town of Flat Rock. According to the banjo clock on the wall behind the bar, it was nearly 2 o'clock in the morning. The place was still open, but not very busy at that hour. Only about a dozen men were in the barroom, and more than half of them were Jardine's men, including the one stretched out on the bar, bleeding onto the hardwood from the bullet hole in his side. The auburn-haired woman who called herself Lady Augusta Winslow looked up from examining the wound.
I charge extra for medical services, Mr. Jardine. I assume you'll cover the expenses incurred for the care of your man here.
Yeah. How's Three Finger doing?
With the proper treatment, he should survive. The bullet's still inside him, so it will have to be removed. If he lives through the surgery, he'll be fine.
Go ahead, but be careful. He's a good man.
That was a rare and generous assessment on Jardine's part. Snyder, Joe Hutto, Angus Braverman, and Doyle Hilliard were among the men clustered around the wounded Three Finger now. Lady Augusta reached behind her to the back bar, picked up a bottle of whiskey, and handed it to Snyder.
Pour as much of that as you can down his throat. It'll be a lot easier to operate on him if he's drunk.
Angus, you and Joe grab onto him. Doyle, pry open his mouth.
Just give him the bottle. Nobody ever had a problem getting Three Finger to drink. Joe, come with me.
Hutto followed Jardine to a table in the corner.
What happened? I left you out there to make sure nobody picked up our trail after that foul-up the other day. I'm guessing somebody did.
Uh-huh.
On the gang's way back to Flat Rock, Jardine had dropped off Hutto and Smith at one of the little buttes that overlooked the trail about 15 miles from the settlement, ordering them to stay there until he told them otherwise. The next day, he had sent a rider out there with enough supplies to last the two sentinels a week. A few days had passed since then, long enough so that Jardine had become convinced the two men they had bushwhacked had crawled off and died or moved on to somewhere else. Either way, he didn't think they were a threat anymore. Judging by the way Three Finger was bleeding on the bar, he'd been wrong about that.
We spotted one of those hombres riding toward town.
You're sure it was one of those men we had the run-in with the other day?
Yeah. I got a good look at him through the spyglass. It was that big fella in the buckskin shirt. Looked sort of like a redskin.
What'd you do?
Well, we saw where the son of a buck made camp, so we figured if we snuck up and killed him, there wouldn't be anything to worry about. But he pulled a fast one on us and was holed up waiting for somebody to jump him. Three Finger caught a slug while we were trading shots with the varmint. I got nicked a bit on the shoulder, but that's all.
You were supposed to light a shuck back here to town and warn me if you saw anybody like that following our tracks.
Yeah, I know, but we thought that...
And that was your mistake right there. You're not supposed to think, dammit. I handle that.
Jardine flung a hand toward the bar where Three Finger had polished off the whiskey and now lay there with a cherubic smile on his face, cradling the empty bottle against his chest.
Now I've got another man with a bullet hole in him, and that fella you ambushed may be smart enough to figure out why somebody tried to kill him. Again.
Lady Augusta poured more whiskey over a knife with a keen blade that glittered in the lamplight.
Now you'll have to hold him down, gentlemen. Hold him tightly. I won't be responsible for what happens if you don't.
At the table, Joe Hutto shook his head.
I'm sorry, boss. We thought we were doing the right thing. What happens now?
Now we wait to see if that son of a bitch shows up in Flat Rock. If he does, I guess we'll just have to kill him here.
Sam had followed the wagon and horse tracks to within a couple of miles of Flat Rock. When the trail got that close, it was lost in the welter of tracks left by other riders and vehicles coming and going from the settlement. Sam wasn't familiar with Flat Rock's history, but he knew the settlement couldn't have been in existence for too many years. As he approached, he saw that it had sprung up at a spot where one of the little creeks in the area flowed across a large flat rock, spreading out to form a shallow pool. That much water was rare in these parts. Officially, this was all Navajo land, but when there was money to be made, civilized men never worried too much about things like reservations and treaties. There were ways around any obstacle, routes usually paved with discreet payoffs. There were a few mines in the Carrizos to the north and some ranches in the basin that spread south toward Black Mesa and Canyon del Muerto. Those mines and ranches needed supplies, and the men who worked on them needed a place to blow their wages on loose women, watered-down whiskey, and marked cards. Flat Rock filled those needs, and as a result, the settlement had more saloons than any other sort of business establishment, by a large margin. When Sam rode into town, the main street was mostly empty in the blistering Arizona sun. A few wagons were parked in front of buildings, and a handful of saddle horses were tied at hitch rails. Less than half a dozen pedestrians were making their way along the boardwalks or trying to avoid the piles of horse droppings that littered the broad, dusty avenue. No one seemed to pay much attention to Sam, despite his buckskin shirt and copper-hued features. Since he didn't know anyone here in Flat Rock, he couldn't trust anyone either. He couldn't even go to the law if there was any, because it was possible that the authorities were connected to the bushwhackers. He and Matt had run into plenty of crooked lawmen in the past. While he was trying to figure out how to proceed, he might as well get something to eat besides the dried venison and corn he'd been subsisting on for the past day. He angled his horse toward the hitch rail in front of a squat adobe building with a sign on it that read simply Cafe. Sam dismounted and wrapped his horse's reins around the rail. As he stepped toward the open door, two men in dusty, well-worn range garb came out of the building. Heavy revolvers rode in holsters on their hips. One of the men was tall and thin, with a hawk-like face and a drooping black mustache. He had an open-clasp knife in his hand and was using the point of the blade to worry at a piece of food stuck in his teeth. That seemed to Sam like a fairly dangerous method for such a task. The other hombre was shorter and considerably stockier than his companion. though not actually fat. His battered old brown Stetson was thumped back on a thatch of rusty red hair. He had an open, honest face with a slight scattering of freckles across his nose and cheeks. The tall man folded his knife and slipped it into a pocket as he gave Sam a smile and a friendly nod.
Howdy.
Good morning, or good afternoon. I'm not sure exactly which it is.
The short man pulled a big railroad watch attached to a thick chain from his pocket and flipped it open.
12:17, so it's afternoon.
Well then, good afternoon.
Are you new in town? Don't recollect seeing you around Flat Rock before.
This is the first time I've been here.
Just passing through?
Sam had no real idea what the men he was searching for looked like, but the bushwhackers might have studied him and Matt through field glasses before they opened fire. So for all he knew, these two apparent grubline riders could be part of the gang. Which meant they could know who he was, too. But without any way of being sure about that, all he could do for the moment was play along.
That's right. Just passing through.
If you're looking for a riding job, there ain't many to be had hereabouts. We ain't looking in particular, because our dinero ain't run out yet. But Flat Rock's a good place to be if you're aiming to make some money. It just looks like a sleepy little burg. Lots of exciting things going on in this town, yes, sir.
Well, that's good to know. If you'll excuse me, I'm a mite hungry.
Then you've come to the right place. Best chow in town.
I'm obliged.
Say, I don't mean no offense, but you look like you got some Injun blood in you.
I'm half Cheyenne.
I'm an 8th Cherokee myself. Like I said, no offense meant. Just curious. Only way a fella really finds out anything is by asking questions.
I suppose that's true. So long.
Sam opened the door and went inside before the talkative cowboy could say anything else. Sleepy little burg or not, the cafe was doing good business in this noon hour. Half a dozen tables covered with blue check tablecloths were occupied, and the stools along the counter were almost all full. Sam took one that wasn't and sat down between a burly man who looked like a freighter and a smaller gent in a suit and rimless spectacles. His formerly stiff collar had wilted in the heat. The freighter, if that's what he was, ignored Sam, but the other man nodded.
Hello.
Afternoon.
The man held out his hand.
Noah Riley.
I'm Sam Two Wolves.
Well, that's certainly a colorful and unusual name.
Not where I come from.
But where's that?
Montana.
Folks in Flat Rock seem to be a friendly, inquisitive bunch.
I've never been to Montana. From everything I've heard, I'm sure it's beautiful up there. Oh, more beautiful than this part of Arizona, anyway.
A middle-aged counterman with gray hair and a white apron came over.
Oh, quit yammering at this fella. He probably came in for something to eat, not a lot of talk.
No, that's all right, really. I don't mind talking, but I would like something to eat.
Well, lunch specials, chicken and dumplings.
That'll be fine. Thanks.
Coming up.
As the counterman turned to the pass-through window that led to the kitchen, Noah Riley pointed to the empty bowl in front of him.
I had the chicken and dumplings. Delicious. You'll enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. What do you do for a living, Mr. Riley?
You can call me Noah. I work at the general store.
I'll bet you know everybody in town, then.
All the ones that have any money to spend, anyway.
You probably don't get a lot of strangers riding through Flat Rock.
No, not as out of the way as we are here. Most people have to have a good reason to come to Flat Rock, or they never even hear of it. But people always need supplies. This is the only place in 50 or 60 miles to get them.
That's true.
Sam didn't see how talking to Noah Riley was going to help him find the men who tried to kill him and Matt, but he didn't have anything better to do at the moment.
Are you a full-blooded Indian, Sam?
The blunt question made Sam raise his eyebrows a little.
Half Cheyenne.
Most of the Indians in these parts are Navajo. This is part of their reservation, you know.
So I've heard. They're peaceful, though, aren't they?
For the most part. Some of the people around here still get nervous about the Navajo, even though all the trouble with them seems to have been over for 15 years. But for all we know, some of them may have long memories.
Could be.
Caballo Rojo was old enough to have taken part in the Navajo Wars back in the 60s.
Well, no standing in the way of progress, hey? Here comes Harvey with your food. Now I have to get back to work. It was a pleasure to meet you, Sam.
Likewise.
Riley reached down to the floor, picked up a black hat, and put it on. He placed some coins on the counter to pay for his meal and left the cafe as the counterman put a big bowl of chicken and dumplings in front of Sam.
Want some coffee or a cup of buttermilk?
Coffee will be fine.
Coming up.
That seemed to be a habitual response with him.
Oh, that is good. Mr. Riley told me it would be. He was right.
Well, old Noah likes to talk, that's for sure. Hope he didn't bend your ear too much.
Not at all. Everybody in town seems pretty friendly. I ran into a couple of cowboys just outside who talked to me, too.
Tall, skinny fella and a little red-headed gink? Yeah, they've been hanging around town for a week or so. Don't know where they get their money, but they seem pretty flush. Maybe they've been lucky at the tables over in Lady Augusta's place.
Sam's interest had perked up at the counterman's mention of how the two cowboys had been in Flat Rock for only a week or so. Of course, that timing didn't have to mean anything, but it was an indication that the two men had shown up in this area about the same time as he and Matt had been ambushed. The fact that they had money, but didn't seem to be working for it, was intriguing too.
Lady Augusta?
You haven't heard of the Buckingham Palace Saloon?
No.
Well, a woman came into town about a year ago. Said her name was Lady Augusta Winslow. She let it be known that she was some sort of English nobility. I couldn't say one way or the other about that. Whole thing could be just a crock of buffalo chips. But she talks like an Englisher, I'll give her that. And she had enough money to start the Buckingham, which is what most folks around here call the place. Biggest and best saloon and poker parlor in Flat Rock, which means it's the biggest and best in the whole four corners. You should check it out.
They let half-breeds in there?
Mister, they'd let a dang Russian Cossack in if he had money to buy booze or gamble.
I just thought since Mr. Riley said folks around here are still a little nervous about the Navajo.
That's true. But you look as much like a white man as an Indian, so I don't reckon you'd have any problems. Well, except maybe with John Henry Boyd.
Who's that?
Before Harvey could answer, the teamster sitting next to Sam suddenly turned toward him.
My God, mister, are you gonna sit there flapping your gums all day? Your food's getting cold.
Take it easy, Jace. Nothing wrong with a little conversation.
There is when it's getting on my nerves.
Take it easy, friend. No one meant to cause a problem here.
You caused no problem.
The teamster shoved his stool back and stood up.
I don't mind him. He's like a surly old bull buffalo, paw on the ground. He don't mean nothing by it.
I'll keep that in mind. Now, you were saying about this John Henry Boyd fella?
He owns the Devil's Pitchfork Ranch south of here. Has a powerful hate for Indians of all kinds. I don't know for sure why he feels that way, but I've heard it said that his whole family, except for him, was wiped out when Indians attacked the wagon train they were traveling with 20 years or more ago.
Sam nodded. It was an old, familiar story.
If you're just passing through, though, you shouldn't have to worry about John Henry. He don't come into town much. He's almost always out at the ranch. Which, hear some folks tell it, is as much of a way station for hombres on the dodge as it is a real ranch.
That was interesting, too. If outlaws frequented Boyd's ranch, that could have some connection to the attack on him and Matt.
I'm obliged to you for telling me.
Just looking out for my customers. It ain't like I've got all that many of them. Tell you what, Jace was right about one thing. Your food's getting cold.
Wouldn't want that.
Sam dug into the chicken and dumplings. As he ate, he mulled over everything he had learned so far, which on the surface didn't amount to a blasted thing. He had some minor suspicions about the two garrulous cowboys he had met outside, but nothing really to tie them to the bushwhackers, and what he had heard about the Devil's Pitchfork Ranch was intriguing. Other than that, nothing. Or maybe not quite nothing. He had learned that the Buckingham Palace was the biggest and most popular saloon in Flat Rock, so that meant most of the people around here would pass through its bat wings at one time or another. If the bushwhackers were still around and on the lookout for him, that would be a good place for them to spot him. And he wanted them to spot him, no doubt about that. The odds of him being able to find the men he was looking for were slim, so it made more sense to let them find him. Maybe then he could figure out what it was all about. That amounted to just about the same thing as painting a target on his back, but this wouldn't be the first time he had done that. When he stepped out of the cafe after his meal, Sam looked along the street and spotted the saloon a couple of blocks up. It was a two-story adobe building that actually had two floors, not one and a false front. A narrow balcony ran along the front of the second floor. The entrance was at the near corner. The sign that read Buckingham Palace Saloon, Beer, Liquor, Games of Chance, Entertainment, was so long it took up the front of the building and ran down the side, too. Before heading for the saloon, Sam looked around for a livery stable. He found one on a side street and turned his horse over to a friendly middle-aged Mexican who introduced himself as Pablo Garralaga.
This is a fine horse, senor. I will take good care of him.
I am sure you will. How much?
50 cents per night, senor. This includes feed and the finest care. And I will repair that damage to your saddle for free. I am skilled at such things.
Sam handed him $2 silver, grateful that Garralaga hadn't asked how his saddle had gotten shot up.
I'm not sure how long I'll be in town, but that'll get us started.
Gracias, senor.
Say, do you happen to know a couple of cowboys who've been in town about a week? One of them is tall and has a mustache. The other is shorter and has red hair.
Aye, those two. The little one, he is not so bad, but the tall one, he never stops talking. Always with the questions. It makes me tired just to listen to him.
Then they're keeping their horses here?
Si, senor. Over there.
Garralaga pointed to a pair of stalls near the front of the barn. Sam strolled over and looked at the horses in apparently idle curiosity. One was a buckskin, the other a wiry paint. Actually, he was looking at the hoof prints they had left in the dust of their stalls, checking to see if either track was similar to the ones he had found out at the ambush site. Neither hoof print looked familiar, so to excuse his actions, he just nodded and came back over to Garralaga.
Nice looking horses.
These hombres are friends of yours, senor?
Not really. New acquaintances, I guess you'd say.
I see.
Garralaga looked as if he didn't really understand, but didn't care either. As long as his customers paid their bills, whatever else they did was none of his business, his expression seemed to say.
Can you recommend a good place in town to stay?
The Territorial Hotel is the only one in Flat Rock, but...
They might not want anybody with Indian blood staying there. Is that it?
I am sad to say that is true, senor. Myself, I don't care. All men's money spends the same.
I understand.
But there is a boarding house where you would be welcome if there is room. A woman named Senora McCormick runs it. If you go there, tell her that Pablo at the livery stable sent you. Her husband and I were amigos before he passed away last year.
I'll do that. I'm obliged, Senor Garralaga.
De nada.
Pablo told Sam how to find the boarding house, and once again, Sam postponed his trip to the saloon. He slung his saddlebags over his shoulder and walked toward the boarding house, carrying his Winchester. Along the way, he came to a general store, so he went inside to buy a new hat to replace the one that had been shot up the night before. Bespectacled Noah Riley smiled at him from behind the counter.
Mr. Two Wolves, I didn't expect to see you again this soon. What can I do for you?
I'm in the market for a new hat.
Right over here.
Riley gestured toward a set of shelves where a number of hats sat, gathering dust. Sam found one that he liked. The new hat didn't have silver conchos on the band like his old one, but other than that, it was very similar. Sam figured he could switch the bands if he wanted to. The boarding house was a frame building, one of the few in town. In this part of the country, nearly everything was built of adobe.
Yes, can I help you?
The gray-haired woman wore a rather severe expression, but Sam thought her brown eyes looked kind. Politely, he removed his new hat.
Excuse me, ma'am. Senor Garralaga down at the livery stable recommended your place to me and said you might have a room for rent. That is, if you're Mrs. McCormick.
I am. Eloise McCormick.
And my name is Sam, Two Wolves.
He waited to see if that was going to make any difference. Apparently it didn't.
I have a couple of vacant rooms. Would you like to take a look at them?
Ma'am, Senor Garralaga spoke so highly of you and your house, I'm sure that's not necessary. I'll take one of them.
She smiled, and that made her look younger.
Oh, well then, come on. I'll show you the rooms anyway, and you can take your pick.
Sam chose a front room that looked out at the street. He liked to be able to see what was going on. The room was simply furnished, but looked clean and comfortable.
What brings you to Flat Rock, if you don't mind my asking? Are you a scout for the army?
No, ma'am. You get many army scouts passing through here.
The cavalry sends out patrols from Fort Defiance every now and then. The Navajo behave themselves for the most part, but it doesn't hurt to remind them of what happened back in 63. My late husband was already out here then and served under Kit Carson.
Mrs. McCormick gave Sam a keen look.
You're not a Navajo, are you, Mr. Two Wolves?
No, half Cheyenne.
Sam wondered how many times he was going to have to answer that question.
I see. Well, clean linens once a week. Breakfast is at 6 in the morning, supper at 6 in the evening. I serve Sunday dinner at 1, but not the rest of the week.
Sounds fine to me.
Your next door neighbor is Mr. Riley from the general store, and he likes peace and quiet. So I hope you'll cooperate in that respect.
Noah Riley?
Oh, you know him.
We've met.
Ah, well, good. You won't feel as much like you're in a strange place then. How long do you think you'll be staying?
Until someone tries to kill me again, and I can find out why. Sam didn't say.
I don't really know. I'll pay for a week. Is that all right?
That'll be fine.
They concluded the arrangement, and Mrs. McCormick left the room. Sam put his saddlebags on the bed and leaned his rifle in the corner. He went to the window and pushed back the gauzy yellow curtain that hung over it. The boarding house was on Flat Rock's only street, and from here Sam could see part of the front of the Buckingham Palace Saloon. A couple of benches were on the boardwalk in front of the saloon, and on one of them sat the two cowboys he had met earlier, evidently just watching the world go by. The tall, skinny one had his knife out again and was using it to whittle something. The shorter one's head drooped forward every now and then, as if he were having a hard time staying awake. There was something about those two, something that bothered Sam. Sam had to walk right past the two cowboys to reach the Batwing door, and just as he expected, they grinned at him in recognition. The tall one continued whittling without missing a beat.
How was the food at the cafe? Best you ever had, right?
I wouldn't go quite that far, but it was good.
Wait till you taste old Harv's Irish stew. It's even better.
Pie ain't bad either.
Go and have a drink?
More like a look around. I'm not much for drinking.
Oh, yeah. Because of the engine blood, I reckon. The firewater don't agree with you.
The man folded his knife and put it away. He held up what he'd been working on. It was a little whistle.
What do you think?
Looks good. Can you play it?
Not worth a lick. Hey, kid. Here you go, son. Enjoy yourself.
He tossed it to a boy passing by in the street.
Gee, thanks, mister.
The boy went on his way. The cowboy put his hands on his knees and, in a loose-jointed fashion, pushed himself to his feet.
Come on, Wilbur. We'll join this here fella.
Sam didn't recall inviting them along, but that didn't seem to matter.
They call me Stovepipe Stewart.
On account of he's so tall and skinny.
And this is my pard, Wilbur Coleman.
I'm Sam Tools.
Well, pleased to meet you, Sam. I figure it's sort of our duty to take you under our wing and show you around, you being new in town and all, and us being old-timers.
Sam almost said something about how he thought they had only been in Flat Rock for a week, but he caught himself in time. He didn't want them knowing that he'd been asking questions about them. Anyway, it didn't matter.
Yeah, real old-timers, that's us. We've been in this burg all of a week.
That's seven times as long as Sam here.
I suppose if you want to look at it that way.
Sam pushed the bat wings aside and stepped into the Buckingham Palace. He saw right away that it was an impressive place, with a long mahogany bar on the right side of the room, cut glass chandeliers that must have been freighted all the way up here from Phoenix, plenty of tables for drinking, and a large area of poker tables, roulette wheels, and faro layouts in the back of the room. There was a piano, too, but no one was playing it at the moment. Even though it was the middle of the afternoon, the saloon was busy. Men stood at the bar where a couple of drink jugglers waited on them. Several of the tables were occupied, too. Young women in short, low-cut spangled dresses circulated among them, delivering drinks and smiles to the customers and ignoring hands that got a little too familiar. A couple of poker games were going on, and men were trying their luck at faro and roulette, too. The only thing that was missing was a parade of saloon girls up and down the stairs to the second floor, with men who wanted to buy their favors. The tall cowboy was watching Sam keenly.
The gals don't do that sort of business during the day, only at night. Lady Augusta says it ain't proper to be bedding down for pay when the sun's out.
How did you know what I was thinking?
Well, you seem to be taking it all in. I sort of figured you'd get to that point in your thinking and wonder about it.
Stovepipe's a demon for figuring things out.
I've heard about this so-called Lady Augusta. Is she here?
So-called? Are you doubting the word of the finest lady ever to set foot in Arizona?
Not really. But you have to admit, it is a little odd to think that a member of British nobility would wind up running a saloon in a backwater town in Arizona territory.
There ain't a thing in the world odd about it. She just got tired of all that foofarar over yonder in England. And who could blame her? Sitting around in mussy old castles on spindly legged chairs and sipping tea with your dad-burned pinky finger sticking out. Who in the Sam Hill would want to spend your days doing that?
Not me.
Not me neither. So don't go saying nothing bad about Lady Augusta, Sam. I won't take kindly to it.
Stovepipe leaned closer to Sam.
He's a mite smitten.
Sorry, Wilbur. I didn't mean anything by it.
Well, that's all right. Just so's you know.
Come on, Sam. I'll buy you phosphate. We'll steer clear of the hard stuff.
All right.
Sam was accomplishing his purpose just by being here. If any of those bushwhackers were in the room, they were getting a good look at him. And, of course, there was still a chance the two men with him were part of the very bunch he was looking for.
Three cherry phosphates, partner.
The tall, lanky cowboy leaned his left elbow on the hardwood.
What brings you to this wide place in the trail, Sam?
Flat Rock seems like more than just a wide place in the trail. It seems like a real town.
Right now it is. I've seen them come and go, though. One of these days it's liable to dry up and blow away like so many others have. And you didn't answer my question.
A man's business is usually his own.
That stovepipe for you. Always poking his big nose in where it ain't wanted.
That ain't it at all. I'm just naturally curious.
He looked at Sam again and raised his somewhat bushy eyebrows. Maybe it was time to put a few cards on the table and see what shook out.
I'm looking for some fellows. About a dozen men on horseback. They rode this way a few days ago.
He didn't say anything about finding the wagon tracks. Stovepipe sipped his phosphate and got some of the bubbles from the fizzy drink on his mustache. He wiped the back of his hand across his mouth.
These hombres you're looking for are friends of yours?
I didn't say that.
Then they're enemies.
I didn't say that either.
Aw, leave the fella alone, Stovepipe.
I'm just trying to help. Maybe I know those fellas Sam's looking for. What are their names?
Sam just smiled and didn't say anything. He didn't want to admit that he didn't know the names of his quarry, or even what they looked like. If Stovepipe and Wilbur were members of the gang, he wanted them to worry about him enough to be prodded into taking action. Stovepipe looked like he wanted to press the issue, but just then, a commotion erupted outside in the street. Everybody in the saloon swung around to look out the big plate glass windows.
What in blazes is all that?
Sounds like that bunch from the Devil's Pitchfork has come to town. And I reckon they're just about ready to raise hell and shove a chunk under the corner.
The only ones in the saloon who ignored the ruckus were the men at the poker tables who were intent on their cards. A moment later, a man slapped the bat wings aside and stalked into the Buckingham, followed by half a dozen more men. They were all rugged-looking, hard-bitten hombres in range clothes. A holstered revolver hung at the hip of each man. Stovepipe leaned closer to Sam.
Yep, that's the Devil's Pitchfork bunch. Some of them, anyway. John Henry Boyd's gun crew. Fell in the lead is Pete Lowry. Tough hombre. All of them are.
Sam had gotten that impression. Pete Lowry was a broad-shouldered man with a jutting shelf of a jaw that gave him a pugnacious appearance. Lowry strode to the bar.
Whiskey for me and the boys. The good stuff, too, not that homemade swill.
All we have is good stuff, Mr. Lowry.
Lowry's hand shot across the bar and grabbed the bartender's shirt front. Sam stiffened. He didn't like to see anyone being manhandled like that. Stovepipe put a hand lightly on Sam's arm.
Whoa, hold your horses, son. You don't want to get on Lowry's bad side. He's not somebody you need for an enemy.
Are you arguing with me?
No, sir. I'm not arguing at all. I'll get you that whiskey. Finest we got. Right away.
It's more like it. Pour it up, Abram. After what happened last night, we need those drinks.
Sam wondered what had happened the night before. He didn't have to think about it for long, because as soon as Pete Lowry had knocked back the slug of whiskey the bartender put in front of him, he turned around and addressed the room.
A bunch of damn savages raided the ranch last night. Killed two punchers and took off with 50 head of cattle. My God, there's going to be a whole new Navajo war here in the Four Corners.
Lowry's words shook Sam, although he managed not to show it. He had a hard time believing that Caballo Rojo or any of his people would have attacked the Devil's Pitchfork Ranch. Even the proddy Juan Pablo just wanted to be left alone. None of them would go out of their way to draw attention to themselves by raiding a ranch and killing white cowboys. Sam would have staked his life on it. Lowry seemed convinced of what he was saying, though. Sam thought about what Noah Riley had said earlier, about people in this area still being nervous about the Navajo. This was going to make them even more so.
A new engine war. What do you think about that, Sam?
I think it's loco. If there are any Navajo still out there looking for trouble, there aren't enough of them to fight a war. I don't think they'd be foolish enough to risk that by raiding a ranch and killing some punchers.
Sam spoke a little too loudly. A man who stood not too far away at the bar overheard him.
Hey, Pete! This fella says you're lying. And from the looks of him, he might be a redskin too.
This ain't good.
Who called me a liar?
Lowry's angry gaze landed on Sam.
I'll bet it was you.
I never claimed you were lying. I just said I thought it was unlikely any Navajo would be foolish enough to attack your ranch.
And how do you explain those missing cows and two of my friends being dead?
I'm sorry about your friends, but maybe the cattle were stolen by rustlers.
On unshod ponies? And those two fellas had arrows stuck in them. Navajo arrows.
Anyone can ride unshod ponies. And white men can use bows and arrows too. It wouldn't be the first time whites have tried to blame the trouble they caused on Indians.
You don't talk like a redskin, but you sure look like one. Half-breed, ain't you?
I'm half Cheyenne.
It seemed like Sam had said that about a dozen times since he'd ridden into Flat Rock.
No wonder you're defending those filthy savages. You're just like them.
The Cheyenne and the Navajo have never been allies. They're from totally different parts of the country. Anyway, the Navajo fought more wars against other tribes, like the Pueblo, than they ever did against the whites.
A redskin's a redskin, and I got no use for any of them. And I sure as hell got no use for a smart-mouthed one like you!
Sam ducked. He'd had a hunch that Lowry was working himself up to a fight. Thrown off balance by the missed blow, Lowry stumbled against Sam, who hooked a hard right into his belly. Lowry's companions from the Devil's Pitchfork surged toward Sam. Sam grabbed Lowry's shoulders and shoved him into the path of the charging cowboys. That gave Sam time to slip his Colt from its holster.
Just hold on, blast it! There's no need for...
Watch it, Sam!
Men were crowded around Sam. Someone in the bunch lashed out and drove the side of his hand against Sam's wrist. Paralyzing pain shot up his arm, and the revolver slipped out of his hand. Another man caught hold of Sam's shoulder and jerked him around.
Let's teach the redskin a lesson!
A fist seemed to explode in his face, sending Sam stumbling backward. He knew if he went down, there was a good chance these men would stomp and kick him to death. But strong hands caught him from behind and kept him on his feet. Sam glanced around and saw that it was Stovepipe Stewart.
Much obliged.
Don't be thanking me yet.
Not only were the Devil's Pitchfork hands closing in around Sam, several of the men who'd been in the saloon to start with had joined the fight too, and all of them wanted his blood. Sam put his back against the bar, hoping that the bartenders would remain neutral, as they usually did when a brawl broke out. Stovepipe was on his right, Wilbur on his left, and both of the cowboys had their fists clenched and ready.
Are you too sure you want to take cards in this game?
You bet. We don't cotton to such bad odds.
So we'll make them a little better.
All right, get them, boys!
Sam stood there with his back against the hardwood, slamming punches back and forth and trying to block the blows aimed at him. Quite a few of them got through despite his best efforts and rocked him. He stayed upright, though, and continued battling. On either side of him, Stovepipe and Wilbur were doing the same. Stovepipe's big knobby fists on the ends of gangling arms snapped out with surprising speed and force and sent more than one man flying off his feet. Wilbur's style was different. With his stocky frame, he was more of a grappler. He got hold of two men and knocked their heads together. Pete Lowry plowed through the melee, knocking men aside in his attempt to reach Sam. Sam saw him coming and was able to get his feet set. He met Lowry's charge with a straight hard left and followed it instantly with a right cross. Unfortunately, neither blow seemed to have much effect on Lowry. That prominent jaw of his might as well have been made of iron. Sam had a hunch the big man's weak spot was his gut and tried to land a punch there, but Lowry was already too close. He rammed into Sam and bent him backward over the bar. Sam brought his cupped hands up and slapped them over Lowry's ears. That made Lowry jerk back and gave Sam room to lift a knee into the man's groin. Lowry didn't shrug that off. He doubled over again. At least nobody else had pulled a gun yet. That was the only good thing about this ruckus.
What in blazes is going on here?
Sam lifted his eyes to the stairs and saw her standing there. Her auburn hair pulled back away from her lovely face, the dark blue gown she wore hugging the splendid curves of her body. Smoke curled from the double-barreled shotgun in her hands. Sam knew that he was looking at Lady Augusta Winslow, the owner of the Buckingham Palace Saloon.
I asked, what's going on here?
It was this Indian, ma'am. He started it.
Now that ain't so. Pete Lowry threw the first punch.
A jerk of the shotgun's barrels made the men shut up. Lady Augusta looked at Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur. Lady Augusta.
You three seem to be at the center of this maelstrom. Come up here now.
Hear that, Wilbur? You get to go upstairs and meet Lady Augusta.
Pipe down.
A deep red flush spread over Wilbur's freckled face. When Sam saw it, he realized that Wilbur had been worshiping Lady Augusta from afar.
Make a path for them.
No one in his right mind wanted to argue with a shotgun. The men moved back to make way for Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur. Sam spotted his Colt lying on the floor underneath the brass rail at the bottom of the bar, where someone had kicked it during the fracas. He reached down, picked it up, and slid it back into its holster, then joined Stovepipe and Wilbur as they crossed the room toward the stairs.
All right. I want everything cleaned up and put back in its place down there. Every man who pitches in to help gets a free drink.
That sent men scrambling to pick up knocked over chairs and right overturned tables. Even some of the men who had been in the middle of the fight were more interested now in earning that free drink.
Don't you believe a word that filthy redskin tells you, ma'am. He says he's half Cheyenne, but he could be lying. Could be one of those murdering Navajo himself, coming to town to spy on us.
That's insane.
Just hush. Move down there to that open door. That's my suite.
Downstairs, Zach Jardine slumped in a chair at one of the tables that had been set back on its legs and glared at Angus Braverman and Doyle Hilliard.
Was that him?
Yeah. I got a good look at him that day, Zach. There ain't no doubt.
He didn't look like he was hurt a bit, the way he was brawling. What about those two men who sided him? Was one of them with him that day?
Nope. Both those hombres are older than the fella who's with the half-breed. I don't know what happened to him. He was hit, so likely he died. And now the breed's looking to settle the score for him.
One of us should have shot him. That idiot Lowry and his friends would have gotten the blame if that happened.
I never got a clear shot at him, Zach, or I might have. Those boys from the Devil's Pitchfork were crowding around him too much.
At least we know the rest of the boys did their job and ran off those cattle.
Jardine had split his forces the previous day, keeping half of his men here in Flat Rock and sending the other half to rustle some cows off the spread south of the settlement. Jardine had told those men before they left that if they got a chance to ventilate some of the Devil's Pitchfork hands, not to hesitate. Dead cowboys and rustled cattle would go a long way towards stirring up the whites in the area against the Navajo. Once those rifles he had hidden here in town were in the hands of the Indians, a shooting war would be inevitable. The hotheads among the Navajo would see to that, and they would find the settlers more than willing to fight. Then the army would come in to clean out the hostels, the government would take back the reservation land it had granted to the savages, and Jardine and his partner would be ready to take full advantage of that. Deeds had already been drawn up, just waiting for the proper developments in Washington. Once they were signed, millions of acres would belong to Zach Jardine, the king of the Four Corners. It had a nice ring to it. Of course, most of those acres were flat, empty, and useless, but they surrounded areas where cattle could be run, and precious water holes and mines producing small but still lucrative quantities of gold, silver, and copper. Besides, there was talk of running a rail line through here, and if that happened, the land would be worth even more. No land where the railroad wanted to go was worthless.
Well, at least we know the half-breed's here now. We don't have to watch the trail for him anymore.
It would be better if Joe and Three Finger had done like they were supposed to. We could have set a trap that would have made sure the meddling bastard was dead by now.
We can still kill him. He's upstairs right now.
With that English woman? Lady Augusta's the belle of this whole region. We don't want anything to happen to her.
That brought another idea, one that had crossed Jardine's mind on previous occasions. In an area where most of the women were either washed-out whores or Navajo squaws, Lady Augusta Winslow was a shining light of femininity. If he was going to be the king of the Four Corners, maybe he could interest Lady Augusta in being his queen. With a little shake of his head, Jardine put aside that appealing thought.
Keep an eye on the breed, but don't let him know you're watching him. If you get a chance, get rid of him.
What about those two cowboys?
I don't have anything against them. But if they're in the way, well, the buzzards would be even happier with three bodies than they would with one, wouldn't they?
When Sam stepped through the door of the suite, he wasn't surprised to see that the sitting room was elegantly and sumptuously furnished, from the rug on the floor to the paintings on the walls to the ornate lamp on a gleaming table.
Sit down. That divan will do.
Stovepipe took off his hat.
Ma'am, not to be argumentative, but that's a mighty nice piece of furniture to have three galoots like us sitting on it. We're liable to get it a mite dirty.
Never mind that. Sit.
She lowered the shotgun as she faced them, but the weapon was still pointed in their general direction. She wouldn't have to raise it much in order to spray them with buckshot if she pulled the trigger on the loaded barrel. Shotguns were heavy enough that some women had trouble handling them, but not this supposedly genteel English woman.
Now, tell me what happened down there.
She nodded at Sam.
You.
Pete Lowry and some riders from the Devil's Pitchfork came in and started talking about how the Navajo raided their ranch last night, ran off some cattle, and killed a couple of hands. I commented to my friend here how that seemed unlikely to me. Someone overheard me and told Lowry that I called him a liar.
Well, I can see how that would spark a confrontation. I've seen these other two around, sir, but not you. Who are you?
My name is Sam Two Wolves, ma'am. And before you ask, I really am half Cheyenne. No Navajo blood, despite what Lowry said down there.
Yes, I didn't think you looked much like any of the Navajo I've seen. And there are plenty of them around here. This is supposedly their land, after all. What about you two? Who are you, and what's your connection with all this?
Stovepipe had his black Stetson in his hand, and when he nudged Wilbur in the ribs with an elbow... Wilbur snatched his battered old hat off his head, too.
They call me Stovepipe Stewart, ma'am. This here's my pard, Wilbur Coleman. You got to pardon old Wilbur. He ain't much for talking, especially around beautisome ladies.
Lady Augusta didn't smile, but Sam thought he saw a twinkle of amusement in her eyes for a second.
Go on. Why were you involved in that fight?
Because we were siding Sam here. Didn't seem fair to us that so many fellas had jumped one lone hombre and give him a thrashing, especially when he was just telling the truth.
Then you were sticking up for the underdog.
Yes'm, you could say that.
For a moment, Lady Augusta regarded them gravely, then nodded, and turned to place the shotgun on a side table.
I can respect such behavior, although my tolerance is strained when it results in damage to my saloon. You gentlemen are forgiven for your part in the hostilities.
She crossed her arms.
Now, what about the Indians? You don't believe there's any truth to what Pete Lowry said, do you, Mr. Two Wolves?
I don't know for sure because I wasn't there. But it seems pretty unlikely to me that people who have been mostly at peace with the white men for more than 15 years would risk starting a war again.
But what if they're starving? What if they had to have those cattle in order to feed their families?
She had a point there. 50 cattle would feed Caballo Rojo's people for quite a while. But that isolated canyon where the Navajo lived was 2 days' ride from here. And Sam hadn't heard Caballo Rojo, Juan Pablo, or any of the other warriors talking about raiding a ranch in the near future, or any other time, for that matter. It hadn't appeared to Sam that the band was running short on food, either. Everyone seemed reasonably well-fed. Between the sheep they raised, the crops they grew, and the deer that roamed the area, none of the Navajo should have gone hungry. They wouldn't have risked everything by attacking the Devil's Pitchfork.
I just don't see it happening that way. Maybe I'm wrong.
What other explanation is there? Or do you believe the incident never occurred?
You mean maybe Lowry and his boss made the whole thing up? Why would they do that?
You tell me, Mr. Stewart.
Sorry, ma'am, I can't. This whole business don't make heads nor tails to me.
Well, it's really none of my affair. I was just curious what nearly got my saloon busted all to pieces, as you ruffians might say.
She went to the door and opened it.
There's a door at the end of the hall that leads to the rear stairs. I suggest the three of you depart that way, rather than going through the main room downstairs. In fact, I insist upon it. Mr. Lowry and his friends may still be down there, and I don't want a repeat of what happened earlier.
Neither do we, ma'am.
The men got to their feet.
It was an honor and a privilege to make your acquaintance, ma'am. Wilbur said likewise, your ladyship.
You're all welcome in the Buckingham Palace Saloon, but not until the boys from the Devil's Pitchfork are gone. Agreed?
That's fine with me. One run-in with Pete Lowry is plenty.
They stepped out into the corridor. As they did, Wilbur seemed to gather his courage. He turned around.
It sure was a pleasure to...
Come along, old hoss. Maybe you'll have another chance to talk to the lady some other time.
Yeah, well, I could have talked to her now if you two blabbermouths would ever let a man get a word in edgewise.
Sam hadn't ruled out the possibility that these two had some sinister motive in befriending him, but it was becoming more and more difficult to remain suspicious of them. They took the rear stairs and went out a door that led into the alley behind the saloon.
Where are you headed now, Sam?
Sam looked at the sky. The afternoon was getting to be well advanced.
I thought I'd go check on my horse at the livery stable, then head for the boarding house where I'm staying. The lady who runs the place told me that supper was at 6 o'clock, and I've got a hunch she wouldn't look kindly on any of her boarders who were late.
Are you going to be in town for a while?
I don't know yet. Probably.
Then I reckon we'll be running into you again. And if you get into any more trouble, let out a holler. Wilbur and me are liable to be around somewhere close by. Flat Rock ain't all that big of a place after all.
I'll remember that.
Sam lifted a hand in farewell as the two cowboys ambled off along the alley. He wondered if Stovepipe's comments meant that the two of them planned to keep an eye on him. And if they did, why? When Sam looked in on his horse at the livery stable, Pablo Garolaga wanted to know if Sam had found Mrs. McCormick's boarding house.
Yes, thank you. Looks like a comfortable place. And as it turns out, the fellow who has the room next to me is a man I met at the cafe earlier.
And who would that be?
Noah Riley.
The little hombre from the general store?
You know him.
I buy goods there, and he comes by here every so often to rent a saddle horse from me.
He didn't strike me as the sort of fellow to go riding around the countryside.
No. He tries to ride, but the poor little muchacho always comes back in such pain. He told me once that he used to live somewhere back east, and he came out here to Arizona for his health. He thinks he should learn to ride so he will fit in better. I try to show him how to sit so he won't be so sore from the saddle, but it's no use. Some people should never get on a horse.
Sam supposed that was true. Even though he had spent so much of his life on horseback, it was hard to imagine that there were people who just couldn't ride. As he strolled back toward the boarding house, Sam mulled over everything that had happened since he rode into Flat Rock. He had met some people, gotten into a brawl, and had a beautiful English woman who just might be nobility point a shotgun at him. It had been an eventful afternoon, but not a particularly productive one. He didn't feel like he was any closer to finding the bushwhackers than he had been before he arrived in town. But they were still here somewhere, his instincts told him. It was just a matter of drawing them into the open and figuring out why they had tried to kill him and Matt. Once he had done that, he could decide on his next move. At least he didn't have to worry too much about Matt right now. That was one thing to be thankful for anyway.